Today, we have about only 18% of companies who are on track to meeting their climate targets. So the system we have today is not working. I mean, that's a reality.
Hello and welcome to Cloud9Fin, a podcast on all things leveraged finance. We follow corporate debt from issuance to redemption, credits from performing to distressed, and everything in between. I'm Sammy Cole.
And I'm Ollie Wise.
And we're your co-hosts for this week's episode of the podcast. And this week, we're going to be talking all about the SBTI and its recent announcement that has quite honestly shaken up the world of sustainable finance. We've got a special guest that's going to be joining us later on. But first, let's set the scene a little bit. So for context, the SBTI stands for the Science-Based Target Initiative, and it's a corporate climate action organization. The SBTI's aim is basically to verify the robustness of companies' emissions reduction targets to ensure that they're aligned with the latest climate science. And so this means that they're aligned with the goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees C.
But the SBTI has come under fire after it announced on Friday that it's changed its stance on the use of carbon credits. Carbon credits, also commonly known as offsets, allow companies to compensate for their emissions by investing in projects that remove or reduce greenhouse gas emissions from the atmosphere. These could include projects like reforestation projects in the Amazon or clean cookstove projects in Kenya. It basically means that instead of reducing emissions themselves, companies can finance a reduction in emissions elsewhere. And up until now, the SBTI stance on carbon credits was that they should only be used as a last case scenario for emissions that are deemed unavoidable. According to the SBTI's latest methodology, a maximum of 10% of a company's emissions should be abated through carbon credits. However, on Friday, the SBTI Board of Trustees announced future plans to allow companies to use carbon credits to abate Scope 3 emissions. So there's a pretty good chance that carbon credits could feature a lot more in corporate net zero targets.
It's important to remember, though, that the SBTI actually released a clarification after its original announcement, and it said that there has not yet actually been any change made to their existing standards, and it said that any changes will only happen after extensive research and a technical council review and approval, and basically any potential changes will only be published in July. But I mean, even so, the decision was pretty controversial. The SBTI stance on carbon credits and its net zero standard has remained the same since it was released in 2021. And as well as this, carbon credits have come under intense criticism this year, which puts into question why the SBTI would change its stance on the matter.
Exactly. I mean, especially when you consider a response from the SBTI staff. They actually responded to the news through an open letter indicating that they weren't consulted and that governance rules weren't actually followed. The letter highlighted that the statement made by the SBTI had caused concern, confusion, and damaged the trust of critical stakeholders.
So before we get more into the nitty-gritty stuff, I think it would be useful to zoom out a little bit and chat a bit more about carbon credits and offsets in order to understand more about why it's become such a divisive topic. Ollie, I'll pass over to you for this one because I know you've done lots of work looking on this.
Yeah, so as we mentioned before, carbon offsets can help companies compensate for any unavoidable emissions by financing a reduction in emissions elsewhere. But before they're sold to corporations, most offsets are initially verified by external parties to confirm that they actually lead to the reductions in emissions they claim. Unfortunately, offsets approved by some of the largest and in theory most reputable external verifiers have been criticized by media outlets like Bloomberg and The Guardian for having questionable methodologies that overstate the emissions removed by a project. In some cases, offsets have also been linked with the removal of indigenous populations from their land.
I know you also did some analysis into the state of carbon credits in high yield markets. What did you find there?
Yeah, so we found that a number of high yield companies had purchased offsets, although most companies provided limited information regarding the nature of the projects. Some companies like British Airways and EasyJet have actually faced backlash in the past for acquiring offsets that were described as flawed. And these were used to back up claims of carbon neutrality. Delta is also currently facing a lawsuit stemming from its offset purchases. Interestingly, Accor, a French hotel operator, previously bought offsets from a project that had been certified by Vera, which is one of the largest offset verifiers. But it actually told Ninefin that at the end of 2021, it stopped purchasing offsets from the project because it was questionable.
Okay, so now we've got some background. Let's get into the market's response to the news. I can see why there was such a negative response to the change in stance from SBTI, especially because of the SBTI's reputation as the ultimate gold standard for emissions target setting. And with the current carbon offsetting market under so much fire due to the widespread greenwashing, this could be seen as undermining the scientific basis of the SBTI's decision. And as well as this, a lot of people have argued that a more relaxed approach to carbon credits could mean that companies choose to offset their emissions rather than actually reducing their impact on the environment, which is what we actually need to reach net zero by 2050.
Yeah, definitely. And to add another perspective to the mix, we actually managed to speak to Nawar Al-Sadi, the CEO and founder of Kanatra Advisors, which is a sustainable fintech advisory firm based in Toronto. Here he is speaking about his take on the SBTI's decision.
Hi, Noah. Thanks for joining me today.
Pleasure being with you, Ali.
So obviously, recently, there's been a lot of criticism in the media of the SBTI's decision to allow companies to use carbon credits to offset some of their Scope 3 emissions. What's your take on this? Do you agree with the criticism?
Well, I would say really the devil is in the details. As a matter of fact, the SBTI is yet to release its kind of final ruling in terms of to what extent Scope 3 emissions will be potentially offset through the use of carbon credits. But I am very supportive of that principle. But again, like I said, it really depends on how it will be structured. It depends to what extent companies can use carbon credits to offset their Scope 3 emissions, under which conditions, and so forth. So we will see. But I'm very supportive of the principle. And the reason I'm supportive of the principle is really twofold. The first reason is that carbon credits can be a critical channel to funnel capital to especially natural or nature-related capital to developing countries. We have a significant gap there, and carbon credits can play a role. And the second reason is that is carbon credits for Scope 3 in particular touch on an area that companies can't control. Companies can't really manage they can only influence their Scope 3, maybe manage is not the right word. Companies can only influence their Scope 3 emissions. They don't have direct control. So giving them an added flexibility to manage that aspect of it is important. And then finally, none of this is going to work unless you have strong guardrails, strong standards, verifiable standards. Everything I'm saying in terms of support is conditioned by that fact. The SBTI needs to make sure that we are using, or companies will be using, only high integrity credits.
Okay, that's really interesting. You've obviously mentioned the role of having verifiable standards for carbon credits. I mean, how important is that, and why is it so important that we have verifiable standards that we can rely on?
Well, because at the end of the day, Ali, this is about climate action. This is about addressing the climate crisis. So without credible, verifiable standards, we can't be certain that investments in these credits are actually having an impact and are solving our climate challenge. I mean, the point here is not just to give companies some talking points to say that we're taking action. The goal here is to give companies an opportunity to take real action, and an action that is verifiable, and an action that will impact and will have at least, hopefully a positive impact on the climate crisis. So this is why I believe standards and guardrails and the fact that this has to be credible is critically important. In terms of consequences for the carbon markets, well, without standards, without trust, without accountability, markets can't function. And we've seen that. I mean, we've seen the impact on carbon markets over the last couple of years. Buyers are walking away. Prices have retreated or collapsed in certain instances because the credibility of these credits have come into question. So again, without a credibility, without a market that people can trust, buyers will not get involved, and ultimately, obviously, can't have a market with sellers only. And if it's not a credible market, it's a market with questionable sellers only. So trust is really critical for this market to thrive and to play the role I just alluded to, hopefully in addressing our climate crisis.
Absolutely. I'm just interested as well, what would be your message to those that have been openly critical of the SBTI's decision?
I believe those critical of the SBTI position have a reason to be skeptical. I mean, there is much that can go wrong with this process if it's not managed properly. But it's important to keep in mind that today, and there was a report that was published a few months ago by Accenture that I'll be quoting, today we have about only 18% of companies who are on track to meeting their climate targets. So the system we have today is not working. I mean, that's a reality. You can have an amazingly perfect structure in your mind that you wish the industry, for example, or the market, or you know, companies to pursue. But if it's not feasible, if companies are not following it, if it's not yielding the results, then this cannot become only an academic exercise. It needs to be translated into real results. So this is whatever we have now is not working. The second reason is, and I think this is really critically important, and I kind of alluded to that a little bit as well, is we have a massive gap for funding nature and biodiversity loss. It's estimated to be at about $700 billion. And carbon credits, specifically nature-based carbon credits, that again, that are high integrity, high quality, can play a critical role in funneling capital to nature-based solutions. A lot of them don't have a business case the same way you can make it around decarbonization. So I believe that aspect as well is important to basically think about this holistically, not just in a linear fashion around carbon. And then the third point, which I think is possibly the most interesting, the skeptics will tell you, well, if we do this, companies are not going to invest in real decarbonization, that this is going, they're going to forego real decarbonization and pay for offsets. But data, empirical data, shows exactly the contrary. I published a report earlier this month called The State of Sustainable Business. There's a section on carbon credits. I invite anybody here to check it out, anybody listening to us to check it out. It's available on my LinkedIn. And you will see that companies that actually purchase carbon credits decarbonize faster than companies that don't use carbon credits. So it's not a disincentive. Actually, executives who work in these companies who purchase carbon credits indicate that decarbonization is more supported within these companies that purchase them. So this argument that I've heard over the last week or so does not, at least it does not pan out in the empirical data. And then finally, I would say, considering the urgency of the climate crisis, we really can't afford to exclude solutions that have real scope to accelerate climate action. I mean, said another way, the perfect cannot be the enemy of the good. And we do need action. And I realize it would be, in an ideal world, it would be great if everybody just decarbonized, period. But I do feel that we don't have that luxury, neither in time, neither in the capabilities available today for companies in diverse sectors to pursue the ideal scenario that some of the naysayers would like these companies to pursue.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really interesting point that you make. Thanks again for joining us on the podcast and providing us with your insights. It's been great having you on.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was a super interesting perspective from Nawa. I think it's so easy to get stuck into just focusing on concrete emissions reductions and forgetting about carbon credits' role as well. In fact, the impacts of carbon credits extend further than just emissions abatement, and there are a huge number of opportunities to direct funding towards nature-related opportunities, which is obviously hugely important as well. At the same time, though, I think it's interesting to point out that there was a meeting last month between all of the biggest funders and promoters of the carbon markets. The meeting was hosted by the Bezos Earth Fund, who are a key supporter of the voluntary carbon market, but they're also one of the main funders of the SBTI. SBTI representatives were present at the meeting as well. And the meeting was basically described as a series of technical discussions on subjects such as emissions accounting. But according to Bloomberg, some attendees said that there was another big motive on the cards, which was to make a case for why the SBTI is the biggest impediment to the growth of the carbon market.
Yeah. So Bloomberg reported that two SBTI representatives were present and faced a significant number of requests to relax their position on offsets, largely from senior leaders of prominent carbon market standards and lobbying groups. I mean, regardless of whether the SBTI's board was lobbied or not, it's clear that we're going to need carbon credits in some form or another. It'll be interesting to see what the SBTI comes up with in July.
Okay, well, that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks so much for tuning in, and please let us know if you have any feedback. We love hearing from our listeners, and you can reach us anytime by emailing team@einfund.com. Check in next week to hear the latest on US markets, and we'll be back the week after that. See you then.